Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, November 8th, 2019 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild and dystopic ride it is indeed. I think I'll mention the book. This is a PDF document. I should probably post it everywhere. I need to get better at posting the archives. It's been a while. It's Friday. You know, usually what we are trying to do is keep the phone lines open on Friday, especially on Friday, to discuss things, you know, free association and whatnot. So we'll do that today. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. I need to get better at posting the archives. I was doing that for a while. It goes in waves, you know, and over the summer when my father got sick, sort of lost track of that, but I think it's helpful to be able to have a clear resource and a place to, I don't know, a jumping off point, I guess, on some topics to be able to explore intelligently and refer back from time to time. I think it's helpful. So I need to do that, and I'll get back to that. We've been talking about the subject of socialism, and primarily the subject of democratic socialism, and that's synonymous with Fabian socialism, even according to the Fabian society itself and the Fabian socialists themselves. And that's, you could argue, synonymous with, the economic aspect of socialism. You could argue, I think very easily, is synonymous with Keynesian economics. They go hand in hand. That's a point that's been proved several times. The problem you have with this the Fabian Society in particular, and the various sort of iterations of socialist influence, is the element of deception. And obviously, you know, that's an important, a vital and essential part of this Machiavellian weapon. And as has been noted, you know, H.G. Wells actually referred to the Fabians as the new Machiavellians at one point. So, interesting. Anyway, I want to mention a book, and we need to have a library too. Larry emails me stuff in particular. A lot of folks do, but this is good stuff, and it should be collected somewhere. I kind of have a Google Drive library that I've published that has some stuff in it, but that needs to be more visible, and we need to be able to understand the forces at work and the implements that have been brought to bear on society. It's a difficult issue, though. You know, I always think you need to just sort of find your way through this stuff and not be led or manipulated or anything like that. And I think there are times when folks are unintentionally coercive or manipulative, shall we say. Anyway, I would never want to do that. And I think sometimes I err in the opposite direction, you know, proceeding with caution to a fault. But, you know, then again, we talk about stuff on this broadcast, so what do you do? Anyway, the book that Larry shared with me yesterday is a great book. Everyone should probably read it. 367 pages. This document, it's a PDF document, actually. The Great Deceit, Social Pseudosciences. Socialist Wolves in Sheep's Clothing, a Veritas Foundation staff study. And published in 1964. The mission of this book is to educate the officials and teaching staffs, governing bodies, graduates and undergraduates of American colleges and universities, as well as the general public on the subject of socialism and communism in their many branches and offshoots and their methods of infiltration. And by this time, by 1964, this pervasive influence was very hard at work. It was a, you know, this virulent strain. This was before, I would say, 1964, and I wasn't alive then. I was born in 1970. So this is my conjecture. This is my speculation. This was already known, but it's the particularly virulent strain of this ideology was at work in the universities, but the effectual outworking of it had not been fully seen in society yet, because it hadn't gone a generation in the universities. And so this was the first generation, and there are other forces that were peripheral, you know, other peripheral forces that were helping to reshape the American society. And in my view, in my estimation, the 60s in particular, right at this time, 1964, was a pivotal moment where this virulent strain of revolutionary ideological influence had a very deleterious effect in America. And I think this is a great book. A companion piece that I was going to mention is actually mentioned and I might even talk about that today. Mentioned in this book, Dr. Olin Glenn Saxon, the trustees and staff of Veritas Foundation dedicate this book to the memory of Dr. Olin Glenn Saxon. And says, while professor of economics at Yale University, he was largely responsible for our book, Keynes at Harvard, and had outlined the plan of his work. So, you know, there were folks who still maintained loyalty to America. These days, we have come so far that you really have to, I think you have to dig. I think you really have to be looking to find a vestige of what that even means, you know, loyalty to country and countrymen, you know. And it's an interesting discussion. You could make several arguments, but, you know, especially faith-based arguments. You know, one might try to argue that one's faith, you know, someone might try to argue, Chris, your faith probably shouldn't endorse national allegiance, allegiance to country and countrymen. And I would entertain that argument, but at the same time, what you see happening now seems to be exactly the what I call anti-biblical narrative, working back to Genesis 11 and Genesis 6. A coordinated effort to get people on the same page, you know, using one language like we see in Genesis 11, doing these amazing things, these great things, building a tower that reaches into heaven, so to speak. You know, basically, the hubris of Nimrod that says, we can be God. You know, we'll just build a tower. We'll just build a staircase to heaven, and we'll camp out there. And the nefarious activity of Genesis chapter 6, again, I mean, I've talked recently again about the efforts of the Lucius Trust in particular. The Lucifer Publishing Company, it was originally known as, back when we had different views, we were holding the line more in the society. We hadn't been pushed over into a dialectical mindset, which just lends itself to relativism, you know, moral relativism in particular. It's, you know, everything's okay. It's all good. So this book is an interesting book. Great Deceit, Social Pseudosciences, Socialist Wolves in Sheep's Clothing. Maybe I'll pull a few excerpts from this. Veritas Foundation Study, 1964. And again, you know, Keynes at Harvard is an interesting companion. And you can actually go to keynesatharvard.com, is it? I think. .org. keynesatharvard.org. And start to dig into that. This is a companion to the subject of the past 3 weeks now. And again, this all sort of started with this echo that democratic socialism is a great thing, and, you know, it just hasn't been tried right. Maybe we should try it the way that Libya tried it. But the problem with, and under the Gaddafi reign, in the Gaddafi years, and the problem with that is that that is the London School Economics, a.k.a. Fabian brand of socialism. And it's pretty easy to ferret that out when you start digging. I'm sure if you do, I wonder, actually, London School of Economics and Libya, search. Yeah. First result, first search result is a Wikipedia entry, LSE Gaddafi Affair. The LSE Gaddafi Affair was a scandal in the United Kingdom that occurred as a result of a relationship that existed between the London School of Economics and the Libyan government and its leader, Muammar Gaddafi, and his son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi. NGO Gaddafi Foundation pledged to donate £1.5 million over 5 years to research to a research center, LSE Global Governance, of which £300,000 were paid. In addition, LSE Enterprise established a contract worth £2.2 million to train Libyan officials, about 400, by the way. And again, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi attended the London School of Economics. So, anyway. And this, the affair is misdirection. What should be important to note is the alliance between the London School of Economics and the Gaddafi government. We'll be right back.
Global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Good morning. Welcome back. We are live this morning, this Friday, November 22nd, 2019. Off to a slow start, but we're started. So one of the things that I've talked about in recent weeks, and there's in that first segment there, I was talking about banking as it related to socialism, and particularly the Libyan brand of socialism. But as I have talked about banking over the past several weeks and before, you know, even back 10 years ago, one of the things that I've mentioned is the issue of mark-to-market accounting and the way that it was used as a sort of accelerant. 10 years ago, in the subprime contagion, and most recently, as I usually do when the subject comes up, I mentioned Bruce Wiseman's 2009 Canada Free Press article, The Financial Crisis, A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain, which was part of a series. And he mentioned a series of six things which led to the crisis, the six ingredients, if you will. And the final ingredient before the crisis was the media and mark-to-market. And so anyway, when it came to the subject of mark-to-market accounting, this is what Warren Buffett had to say 10 years ago. Go ahead, please.
Solutions. Theodore in Woodstock, Georgia writes in with a question a lot of people have asked. He says, should the SEC suspend mark-to-market accounting?
You know, I've almost been theological on mark-to-market accounting because I've seen so much of what people do when they're allowed to use their imagination on balance sheets or income statements. And frankly, American business misbehaved in a big way, particularly in the 90s, but people did play games with numbers, and they probably still do, but it was almost accepted as a way of doing business. So I've always been suspicious when you give a CEO a pen and tell him it's the honor system. And anything other than mark-to-market works in that direction. Now, it's true, I think, that mark-to-market it's been some gasoline on the fire in terms of financial institutions. The markets are, on certain things, are pretty unrealistic, which is why I said just a little while ago that I would rather buy the toxic assets at market from a bank than they're good, than their best assets. There's more money to be made in those, and they've been marked to a level where there's a lot of money, you know, where they're probably below fair value, in my opinion. So I'm sympathetic. I think the best way to handle that, though, probably still, is to have the mark-to-market figures, but not have the regulators say, we're going to force you to put a lot more capital based in on these mark-to-market figures. I say in our annual report, we mark everything to market. I say I don't agree with it in certain cases, and I explain my reasons, and shareholders can decide whether they think the reasons are valid or not. I hate to give it up.
So there's a distinction also that needs to be made, and we've got a clip for that. We'll play in the next segment. That's Steve Forbes on a point of clarification. But you heard Warren Buffett there, who, you know, since he was delivering papers as a young man in Nebraska, has been pretty financially astute, you might say. And so you heard him say some interesting things there. You know, when you give a CEO a pen and tell him it's the honor system, you know, he's suspicious. And mark-to-market has been some gasoline on the fire. It's an accelerant. Meaning what? You know, there is a warped bias that is applied, and the media hysteria. Bruce Wiseman did a brilliant job of pointing out that it's not just mark-to-market. It's the hysteria and the frenzy that is created when you start to have a plunge or a panic. It's the bank run of the old days, only magnified to, you know, by orders of magnitude. You know, it's not just a local bank run or a national bank run. It's basically terrifying the entire world to, you know, cause financial pandemonium. And the pandemonium is not entirely unfounded. It's not entirely legitimate. It's kind of some fakery, because, you know, it's mark-to-market is based on perception. So if you give people the impression that the perception is the sky is falling, and then you have the media hype that, what do you think will happen? Anyway, we'll talk more when we come back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you. Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns, their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down, the fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up, and long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Yeah. Welcome back. Bottom of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Friday, November 22nd, 2019. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that RBN is in the middle of a pledge drive this week. So your support is greatly appreciated. As always, feel free to go to the website and up there in the left sidebar, top of the page, under the section titled Support RBN Today, you can see the little donate button. You can donate through PayPal with a credit card or debit card. obviously don't need a PayPal account, or to donate by phone, call 800-724-2719, extension 3. Again, 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or to donate by mail, send cash, check, or money order payable to RBN at 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And all of that information is on the website there at the top. So, again, your support is greatly appreciated. This is listener-supported radio and, shall we say, patriot-supported radio. So, this financial stuff, Warren Buffett says mark-to-market accounting was an accelerant. It was gasoline on the fire, which is what I have said. If you understood how that worked, the media hyping the mark-to-market, the consequences of mark-to-market, when Lehman Brothers was faltering and the mortgage-backed securities class that they were holding, when they had a fire sale on their assets, at one point it was down to about 6 cents on the dollar. And so that meant that the market had to mark to 6 cents on the dollar. And if you, it's not just that mark-to-market was an accelerant, it's that the media frenzy at the perception of marking down, you know, since you have to mark your asset class to the market, if the market is in panic and it's in utter freak out, then guess what happens when the media gets a hold of that? So anyway, with a point of clarification, here is Steve Forbes debating Howard Dean, which I think is ironic. This, again, is 10 years ago. So go ahead, please.
Steve, this is a quote from Kevin Warsh, one of the Fed governors, a speech he gave this week. Government should outline and defend a positive vision for financial firms and welcome back private capital's return. Some are reading that as the Fed, having been scrutinized by Congress in recent weeks, pushing back, saying, if you want our stuff to work, you guys have to lay off the language, right? Lay off the anger.
Well, there is something to that. And also, though, I hope he's referring to this whole mark-to-market controversy. As you know, FASB, Financial Accounting Standards Board, made a few changes, but not nearly enough. They're not going to allow the banks to rewrite up the assets, some of those toxic assets, which were knocked down too much. If you do a cash flow analysis, those toxic assets, still probably worth 50 to 60 cents on the dollar, not 10 or 20 cents. So let's get more realistic valuations. And so banks don't have to worry about the big black hole out there, nor do life insurers in terms of their balance sheets. And then they can start lending again.
So what Bernanke and Geithner and company did was to put this plan out to get the toxic assets off the balance sheets. By the way, you know, as a free market guy, you should like the idea of this program, because that's if these assets are undervalued, we're now going to have a market for the assets, and we're going to find out what these private investors are willing to bid for them. I actually think they're probably overvalued a little bit in some cases, but let's find out. There's now a market for this stuff as soon as we get these partnerships up and ready. But the most important thing is when you take the toxic assets off and put them in the private sector with these investors, then the banks have no excuse for not rolling over the credit of the small business people who are being driven out of business for no
The reason. One of the key reasons why the banking system, even though it has more cash than it's ever had before, is in a state of semi-paralysis still today, is because of uncertainty about how much capital it really has. And
right,
when the regulators start to mark down because of this crazy mark-to-market rule to unrealistic levels, banks aren't going to make those kind of loans. And that's why it's very hard to roll over a loan. You pay more, you pay 2,000 points above LIBOR and stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
And
but
so
mark-to-market
has been a disaster. If we'd had that in the early 1990s, when we last had a banking crisis, we'd have destroyed most of the major commercial banks in the country.
See, I think mark-to-market is there for a good reason. It gives us some transparency. You can't hold assets and put them at whatever
regulatory capital, Governor. Regulatory capital is supposed to be long-term capital. capital. What would the value of your house be if you had to sell in the next 10 minutes? That's what mark-to-market did to the capital of
right,
banks
and insurance companies. I don't disagree with having modified the mark-to-market rules, but I think you have to know what the market for your asset is.
Fine, but put it in a footnote. As Alan Greenspan, he got this right 18 years ago at the SEC. He said that's wonderful information, don't flow it through the balance sheet.
The point you're both making is the same, and that is when the rules change, it's impossible to invest, right? It's impossible to play markets where, whether you agree with the governor or yourself, there needs to be consistency. Governor, the stress tests, if we do in fact get some meeting about it tomorrow as some are reporting, and if it's true that all of them are going to pass, does that test have any credibility with you?
I think it probably does. Look, I don't fully understand exactly what they're doing with the stress test, but any kind of way that you can measure performance, there's some banks that are worse than others, and it's going to be interesting to find out. At some point, some of these banks are going to be taken apart and dismantled, and it's important to pick the right ones if you're going to dismantle them.
Then why is the government saying everybody's going to pass this stress test?
I don't know, because I don't know what's in the stress test exactly, but if they're all going to pass the stress test, maybe none of them are as in bad shape as we think they are.
Well, precisely, and that's the whole thing on the mark-to-market. If we didn't have that kind of crazy system, right now the banks today, as you know, have twice as much cash on their balance sheets than they did 6 months ago. They are brimming, and on an operating basis, they are making more money than ever before. But because of the crazy regulators and auditors, fearful of lawsuits, are doing this thing, we still have a constipated credit system.
Well, Steve, let me ask you a question about mark-to-market. If you got rid of mark-to-market, how would you prevent banks from falsely inflating their assets and essentially falsely deflating deflating the amount of leverage they have?
Well, if it's a regulatory capital, you wouldn't have what you had in the 90s and early part of this decade, where capital is artificially increased thanks to mark-to-market, and then in a downturn, artificially decreased. You want capital to be steady long-term. If you're buying a 10-year bond for a 10-year liability, don't have it fluctuate day-to-day. It's a long-term liability. Regulatory capital should be stable in value, and if there's a loan's impaired or an asset's actually impaired, then you write it down. It worked for 70 years after the Great Depression. We got rid of mark-to-market back in 1938 for a good reason.
That is a fantastic segment. That's a fantastic segment. Steve Forbes with lots of common sense there. You know, Howard Dean is trying to game the discussion, and Steve Forbes with some common sense, you know, regulatory capital, you know, Howard Dean, we need some, you know, transparency is a good thing, sure, but when it comes to mark-to-market, as Steve Forbes said, regulatory capital is supposed to be long-term capital, and his example, his illustration is brilliant. You know, what would the value of your house be if you had to sell it in the next 10 minutes? And do you see how that would sort of create a feeding frenzy? It doesn't take a rocket scientist. You know, then, you know, as the host mentions, when the rules change, it's impossible to invest. And as Steve Forbes said, you know, it's a perfect storm, and it's a gotcha situation. If you want to, you really want to put the screws to people, then as Steve Forbes pointed out, you know, at that time, FASB was saying, the Financial Accounting Standards Board was saying that you have to mark down, but you cannot mark back up. Well, why not? And there are, you know, what I would call surreptitious justifications for that. They don't make sense, and at least not in any sort of reasonable context when you're trying to allay suspicions of conspiracy. And specifically, the notion that somebody's trying to pull a fast one. In other words, please put to rest my fears and concerns that you are trying to engineer a crisis here. So no reasonable justifications in light of that suspicion, so to speak. And so one more entry, I think. We'll have barely just enough time to squeeze this in real quick. Rich Berg on Fox News, same thing. 10 years ago, here's a little more clarification on mark-to-market. I don't think people really understand what it is or how it works and why it's important to understand, at least to some, you know, cursory degree. Here's Rich Berg. Go ahead, please.
All right, well, forget the stimulus. A lot of financial experts believe eliminating or suspending mark-to-market accounting rules would do a lot more to help the economy and really stop the bleeding in the financial sectors. Let's talk more about this. Joining us, Rich Berg from Performance Trust in Chicago. He's leading a campaign to scrap mark-to-market. And Rich, it's a bit of a heady topic, so let's put it out there in a way that everybody can understand. Tell us what mark-to-market is and why it has become such a massive problem for all the banks.
Okay, let's separate out the definition of bank. You have an investment bank and you have a commercial bank. I'm talking about mark-to-market for commercial banks. So commercial banks have assets. They make loans, they purchase securities. Right now, if some third party does not like the value of their loan or security, they can force them to write that asset down to whatever the market price is today on the bid. The problem is that if you push that to an extreme, every bank will make a loan no longer than 90 days. And they'll re-underwrite the loan. So the old days of, hey, we got a 30-year mortgage, a 15-year mortgage, ain't going to happen. 90-day mortgage. Why? Because if I have to be able to liquidate that loan every 90 days, I'm going to pass that expense down to you.
And, so what's happening? And banks, unlike people, right? Let's say you buy a house for 100 grand and it goes down in value and now it's worth, say, 80. You don't have to sell it. Your house is worth 80. You don't have to sell it. So you're fine. If you had to sell it, you'd be in trouble. The problem is, right, with banks, they have to maintain certain levels of capital, the reserve ratio. So as they write these values down on their books, even if they don't have to sell them, they need to raise more capital, right, to maintain those levels, which is why we hear that they are, quote, hoarding taxpayer money. They have to.
Right. Well, and it's more than that, though, is if I go below a certain capital, I'm out of business. So now, let's say you're the manager of the bank. Do I add another asset that right now is good, that down the road may not be viewed good, I have to write it down and I'm out of business. Not when I'm staring at all these potential mark-to-markets. And mark-to-market sounds great in theory, but for a commercial bank that we're asking to be a long-term fabric of the infrastructure of the United States of America, it doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't. It also, it's like the law of unintended consequences. We understand why this was put into place because they wanted to reflect on bank balance sheets the more realistic, I guess, of the moment valuations. The problem is, right, we had such a wipeout, such a steep drop in the value of these things that you could make the argument, and I personally believe this, that in 5 years, a lot of these assets that are worth almost nothing now will have some value and more than we have today, so the banks may recover. The problem is right now because they're being forced to market to this terrible valuation.
Do you agree that a lot of this stuff will be worth more
down the road?
Right, so let's make sure I get my little commercial in here. For much more information, go to marktomarketdebate.com. Write an opinion. You can agree or disagree. Write your opinion. Get informed. Let's go back to your question. So I have a loan or an asset. Let's use the Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta as a really good example. High-quality asset. It wasn't subprime. It was well underwritten, good stuff, private mortgage-backed security rated AAA. They have now looked at their cash flows, and they believe on a $300 million position, they will lose maybe $50,000 of principal 15 years from now. For whatever reason, the market is valuing that at 60 cents on the dollar, which is a 25% discount rate. Should they write off $50,000, or should they write off $87 million? The answer will make the survivability of an institution dramatically different. And right now, FASB is saying, nope, you got to write off $87 million because that's the liquidation value. It's ignoring the fact that I'm going to get all the cash or most of the cash. And right now, you have excessive discount rates applied to anything that has any credit risk at all attached to it.
Yeah, and you want to survive that? And can you imagine if these rules applied to U.S. consumers? where, you know, because the value of your house has gone down, suddenly someone says, well, theoretically right now your house is down in value, so we need to jack up your credit limits or, you know, credit card rates, et cetera. They've kind of done a little bit of that. But thank God we don't have this, for the most part, as consumers. We'd all be doomed.
Right, right. Well, it's a little bit worse than what you suggested, though. Let's say your viewer
has
a mortgage. Right. Well, let's say your viewer has a mortgage, and they bought a house for $400,000, took out a $350,000 mortgage, and now the house is worth $300,000. Under mark-to-market, you will get a $75,000 to $90,000 margin call that if you don't meet right now, you're going to foreclose on the house, even though the consumer says, wait a minute, I've made all my payments. I'm current. That's not the standard. Guys, we're going to destroy the financial fabric of our banking system if we don't correct this. And it's complicated. It's not as simple,
yeah.
But it's very complicated.
Well,
it's shocking to me. You know what it costs the taxpayers? It costs us nothing to suspend it. It might work. It doesn't cost you anything, but it's killing us right now.
And you know what, Rich? You've explained it about as well as anybody we've had, so we'll invite you back on soon. Rich Berg, Performance
All right.
Trust, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Mark-to-marketdebate.com.
I agree. I think Rich did a magnificent job in 5 minutes of explaining, you know, giving some background on mark-to-market and the specific, you know, again, the point of clarification, you know, commercial banks, because you have to, and again, this gets back to Bruce Wiseman's article, The Financial Crisis, A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain. Glass-Steagall is point number three. So around the same time that we learned that mark-to-market wasn't a good thing, you know, 70 years ago, again, as Steve Forbes was talking about in that clip we played, Glass-Steagall was instituted to separate investments in banking, to keep risky investments out of savings accounts. And so that was a point of clarification that Rich Berg mentioned, you know, from the outset. First, let's establish what we're talking about. You know, let's separate, you know, define terms. You have an investment bank, you have a commercial bank. And so I'm talking about commercial banks. And it's an important distinction and point of clarification, because this sort of behavior, you know, the investment banking world is a whole different animal. And that was the big coup. You know, we got this sales pitch from the William Devil Bill Rockefeller, you know, types, who said essentially, you know, it's real property, what could possibly go wrong? And a series of ingredients were brought to bear that systematically engineered the perfect storm. And that's how we got to where we got. And mark-to-market accounting was the final straw that broke the camel's back. So anyway, all of those clips were 10 years ago. So people might say, well, what? So why is that important? You know, what's the reason for mentioning this now? Well, recently, this month, Brookings Institution hosted an event discussing mark-to-market accounting. November 15th, a week ago, Taxing Capital Income, Mark-to-Market, and Other Approaches. And we'll probably play a little excerpt of that maybe in the next segment. An Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center event. We'll play a little bit of part three on that. There's a YouTube video. A few, actually. But so you heard from some experts. You know, Warren Buffett, not necessarily a fan in this application of mark-to-market accounting. Steve Forbes, same thing. You know, why? Because logic, stupid. Rich Berg, you know, anybody with any sense, really, I would say, that has any understanding of how this works knows that you know, it's the Dewey-Oxberger argument. you know, ox from stripes. Do you want to try this? You want to try mark-to-market accounting? I mean, it's going to be great if things are going up. You know, it's great if things are going up. And then if there's a panic, then everyone marks to the market as things are coming down. And by the way, you know, again, that point of clarification in the, I believe it was the Steve Forbes clip, FASB says you can't mark back up. And none of this has any, there's a point where it becomes completely detached from reality in the hysteria and pandemonium, particularly of the media frenzy, which again gets back to Bruce Weisman's article. And it has nothing to do with reality. You know, when panic and pandemonium ensue, and there's a stampede, someone yells fire in the theater and everyone stampedes, does it matter if there's a fire or not? Even if there's no fire, real people get killed, trampled. And that's essentially what this does. So, you know, there might be ways that you could do it that don't, maybe you could sort of detach it and dissociate it with from the media, but that would be counterintuitive and counterproductive in the sense that you would not have the kind of oversight that, you know, guys like Howard Dean say, you know, transparency is great. Well, sure, but I don't know what the analogy is. You know, having someone watch open heart surgery and their reactions influence the course of surgery, maybe that's kind of a crude analogy, but the point is to have the market, to have the masses and the media who have no understanding really of the forces that are at work here be influencing and shaping market outcomes is, and with a sense of hysteria and pandemonium, that's just dangerous. I can't imagine how anyone would think that was a good idea. So, but the point is, here we are talking about this again. I was shocked to see that the Brookings Institution is, this is a talking point. And so for the past, again, I mean, I mentioned this just in the past 2 or 3 weeks. Recently, you know, folks like the guys over at Agora Financial, for example, who are, you know, guys like Jim Rickards. We should play that clip. I think I will, actually, in the second hour here in a second. We'll play Jim Rickards from 10 years ago. That clip never leaves my mind. Robert Kiyosaki, these people have been saying for years now, almost three years, guys like this, you know, it's coming, it's coming. Correction is coming. And now you have Brookings talking about mark-to-market, which to me is just another harbinger. So stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.